Yo, 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 what's good, what's good, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. So, the both women's and men's tournament is all over. Yeah, it's all over. Both number one overall seeds, South Carolina and UConn, won their respective tournaments. And can I say I'm surprised? I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. So we're going to get into it. We're not going to waste too much time. We're also going to talk about Coach Calipari, John Calipari leaving Kentucky, you know, his stint at Kentucky and then now Arkansas, who should Kentucky go after, you know, likely candidates and so forth. but first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah K of the Isaiah K Podcast, coming back with you for another episode. Greatly, greatly appreciate everybody supporting. Love the comments, love the questions that you guys usually leave after these episodes. You guys have been doing a pretty good job. Since I have incorporated that into the show, you guys have done a pretty good job with following through, doing that, leaving comments, leaving thoughts, and so forth. So greatly, greatly appreciate it. I mean that for sure. So let's just get into it. Let's talk about the women's tournament first. The women's tournament, once again, not surprised. It did historic numbers. I think it finished with like 18 million, nearly at 19 million viewers. So the ratings were phenomenal. With South Carolina and Iowa, it was the classic great team versus great player. And usually in those type of matchups in sports, the great team usually beats the great player. Frankly, South Carolina was just better. They were just a deeper team. They were just better. They're the deeper team. So that means fresh legs. They were a bigger team. They had more length. They were more athletic. And the reason I know this, and I, you know, it was kind of shown early on, even with Iowa's really hot start, they got off to a really blazing start. South Carolina withstood Iowa's best punch. That was like the start of that game. First couple of minutes of that game, that was Iowa's best punch. And South Carolina stood there. They took it. Don Staley didn't even take a timeout. Iowa came out, knocked down some threes, like hot jump shooting. And South Carolina withstood that their best punch from Iowa. I told you guys over the past couple episodes when we were talking about Iowa and Caitlin Clark, I thought LSU, like just going roster for roster, player for player, I thought LSU was better. I thought UConn was better. I think Iowa and Caitlin Clark overachieved by just getting back to the national championship game, looking at the path that they had. The path to the national championship game for Iowa was really, really hard. Just looking back at it, it was a really hard path. So they had to, just to get out of their region, they had to beat LSU, who were deeper, better, longer, right? And then they played a historic blue blood in UConn with legendary coach Geno. Like, it was a really tall order and ask. But yeah, South Carolina is really, really good. I've watched a handful of their games, right? And they mostly all look the same, right? They just have these stretches where they lock in, they lock you up defensively, they're rotating fresh legs, they're getting up and down, and what was once, you know, maybe a one-possession game, you know, two-point lead, three-point lead, right? It quickly turns into a 12, 15, 20-point lead. And I watched them do it versus NC State in the Final Four, where it was a one possession game at halftime. They were up by one, and then they just completely just went on like a 6 to 10 minute stretch where NC State didn't have a chance. And you kind of saw that with this in this game with Iowa, where, you know, Caitlin, as good as she is, she's all time great. just too much to overcome with South Carolina and just the size. I mean, it was so bad where I think it ended up South Carolina had 37 bench points to Iowa's zero, right? So that kind of shows you the depth. That kind of shows you the fresh legs. South Carolina started to make some outside jumpers. Cardoso is just a force inside the middle. Like, it's not surprised. 38-0, and you gotta give a tip of the cap to this South Carolina unit and Dawn Staley. I think another thing that doesn't get talked about much with this undefeated season with South Carolina, with them being 38-0, these are all five new starters from last year's team. So the continuity, the sustainability that we're witnessing and displaying, that South Carolina is displaying, it, 109-3 in the last 3 years. They got three straight Final Four appearances, two championships, right? I mean, this looks a lot like Kirby Smart in Georgia. It kind of has that feel where they're just better, they're quicker, they're stronger, they're deeper. It kind of has that feel to it with South Carolina. It's very much Kirby Smart in Georgia. That's what South Carolina has going on right now, and like they're on a crazy good run. And the crazy part about it is, like, as I already alluded to, their bench is full of really high-end premium players, right? So they're gonna be back in this thing, back in the mix for the next several years. With Iowa, Caitlin Clark, I think the discussion, is she the greatest college basketball player ever? I'm not gonna have that discussion. What I do know is though, she's one of the all-time great college basketball players. And I think in sports, and I often tell you guys this, we I explain this when we were talking about college football, and people ask, they how these people get when it comes to these coaches that haven't won a national championship, right? But they tell me that Brian Kelly can't be an elite coach, or he can't be viewed as a really good coach, because he hasn't won a national championship, right? And you guys know how we quickly dispel that logic, and we poke holes through that argument and through that balloon. You know how quickly, guys, if you're a regular listener, you know how quickly I poke holes through that whole little argument, that whole little shebang where what has he won, that whole little thing. I quickly dispelled it. And with Caitlin Clark, the logic, I see, and much respect to Breanna Stewart, who is an all-time great college basketball player herself, but she was asked a question. Does Caitlin Clark need a championship to be an all-time great college basketball player? And Breanna Stewart said yes. And I've seen over the past week and a half or so, people run with that logic. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't care who you are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that logic is so skewed. That logic is so skewed. And it's such a shitty logic. I'm even surprised that the caliber of basketball mind that I think that I would believe Breanna Stewart to be, I'm just so flabbergasted that she would even make a comment like that, that she would even defend such a logic like that. I know some of you guys probably even listening, you guys probably operate under that same kind of logical thought process. So let me not even bash you before you pause and don't listen to the rest of the episode. Before you do that, let me just how as quickly I dispel the whole notion that Brian Kelly or Dan Lanning or Sark can't be a really good coach, you know, because they can't be a really good coach in college football because they haven't won a national championship, right? As quickly as I dispel that, let me dispel this logic right here. Because this logic right here is so flawed in so many ways. But let me point it out just in two ways. Let me poke a hole in this balloon. First, there's plenty of players that have had awesome, all-time great college careers who, by this logic, wouldn't be considered great women's college basketball players because they don't, quote-unquote, have a national championship. So I'm talking about the people of the likes like, I don't know, Lisa Leslie. May have heard of her, right? Right? May have heard of her. I don't know. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't, right? She isn't an all-time great college basketball player. Mind you, you know, she didn't win a national championship, right? But she's a three-time All-American. She was a player of the year. She was all Pac-10 all 4 years of her collegiate career. But nah. She can't be considered an all-time great college basketball player because she doesn't have a ring. Okay, fine. Sure. Okay. Skylar Diggins, does that count, right? Even better. Breanna Stewart's teammate in Sabrina Ionescu, she can't be an all-time great college basketball player because she doesn't have a national championship, right? Yeah, right. You see how crazy that logic sounds? You see how crazy that logic sounds? Crazy logic, right? I think it's just crazy logic. There's countless others that I did not name, right? That I did not name, that did not win championships as a collegiate player. There's plenty of to go around. I just named a couple, right? Because I just want you to hear how crazy that sounds. Because they don't have a national championship, or they didn't choose to go to three top programs. Tennessee, UConn, South Carolina. If you went to one of those three schools in 4 years, you're granted to win a national championship or two or three, or in sometimes Breanna Stewart's case, four, right? Because she had the fortune of playing, she had the benefit and fortune of playing with 11 other WNBAers. And I'm not trying to poo-poo Breanna Stewart. I think she's awesome. I think she's a all-time great college basketball player herself. I just think that skewed, that logic that she used in that argument is just skewed and flawed. Right? But past that, I think it's just too easy, you know, with other great female hoopers who got recruited to go to one of the top, programs. They end up on these loaded teams. And like I said, if you go to Tennessee, South Carolina, UConn, one of your four years, you're destined to win a championship. And if you don't, you're going to be playing for the opportunity to play in the championship. Right? And for instance, Caitlin Clark, and this is no disrespect, but her team is full of future nurses and lawyers, and they still made three Final Four appearances in her 4 years. Back-to-back Final Four appearances, back-to-back years playing for the national championship. And she has people, little Gabby Marshall isn't going to be playing the WNBA, ladies and gentlemen. She's someone's future doctor. She's like, her teammates are going to be running future insurance companies. It is night and day I just think it's not fair when you compare girls who've gone to stack rosters full of 4 and 5 star players and recruits. Meanwhile, Caitlin Clark is carrying three stars to back-to-back national title games. She's easily one of the all-time great college basketball players. That logic is so skewed, in my opinion. But even with that, I don't get it. Because to me, with Caitlin Clark, and not just to me, but like numbers prove it, she is... Not only her legacy is great, But I think what really just cements her legacy is that she's a needle mover. She moves the needle. She changed over the course of 2 years, right? Her last 2 years, she changed people's viewing habits of women's college basketball. She's changed people's viewing habits. That's the same thing Tiger did with golf. When Tiger burst onto the scene with golf, that's the same thing he did. Michael Jordan did the same thing when he was in the NBA. He was clearly, not to take anything away from, you know, Kareem or Magic or Bird, but Michael was truly and clearly, you could see it. You were alive during that time. I wasn't. But he was transcendent. He was transcendent. It looked different. I think with Caitlin, she has a Steph Curry element where it's like, whoa, like we've never seen this before. And it grabs people's attention. It garnered and gained a lot of eyeballs. So when I see the unnecessary, like, Caitlin Clark is going to be a cash cow for the NBA. So when the WNBA, and this is kind of like the contradiction, because when the WNBA, they've been fighting for years to be noticed. They've been fighting, you know, we want higher pay. We want to be treated better. We want this. We want that, right? They've been fighting to get more notoriety, more media coverage in sports. But then when it's actually being talked about and the women's game is being shown love, they decide to show, like, you know, they decide, you know, they want to. I see a lot of envy, a lot of jealousy, some hate coming Caitlin Clark's way, and I just don't get it. This is their cash cow. This is their cash cow. Like, this is their cash cow. Caitlin Clark has a chance to not only be a cash cow for the WNBA, but to also transcend and really change how people look at the WNBA. The WNBA is viewed as a failing, underachieving, damn near bankruptcy business model. That's how people look at it. That's because, I mean, the NBA funds it continuously just so it can stay above water and it doesn't drown. Caitlin Clark has the ability to change the trajectory of the WNBA. So when I hear all-time greats, like I said, all-time greats in the sport, like a Diana Taurasi, a Sue Bird, a Breanna Stewart, when I hear them kind of just, I don't like to use the word hate, but it comes when I hear them talk about Caitlin Clark, it comes off a way. It comes off very envy, I would say. There's some enviness, and I don't understand it. Because just like, for instance, in the 80s, Bird and Magic saved the league. The league before Bird and Magic, the NBA Finals was coming on tape delay. Right? They totally saved the league. But halfway through the 80s, there was this skinny kid out of North Carolina, high-flying skinny kid out of North Carolina. He goes by the name of Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And he was clearly, truly transcendent. And granted, Magic and Bird, they're competitors, right? They're ultra competitors. But they never just outwardly, publicly shitted on Michael Jordan because they knew, you know, they knew that he was next. He was the guy that was going to take the baton and take over the league. And truly, not only did he take the baton and take over the league, but he transcended the sport and the league to a whole different level and atmosphere. And so when I look at women like Diana Taurasi, who some people would probably claim to be one of, if not the best WNBA player of all time. When you see that type of when you just hear their comments and the things that they say towards Caitlin Clark, it's just like, I just don't get it. I don't understand it, because this girl literally has the ability to transcend the sport and take the sport to a whole nother level. So big ups to Dawn Staley after, you know, during the trophy celebration or trophy presentation where she shouted out Caitlin Clark and her impact on the game and on the sport, because it's truly transcendent. She's a needle mover. Caitlin Clark is a needle mover. And truly, this spring, March and April, she changed a lot of people's viewing habits, just like Tiger, just like Jordan. And there's a lot of like Steph Curry element, not just to her game, but how marketable, how visible she is. There's a Steph Curry element there. She has the chance to really change the fortunes of the WNBA. I just hopefully it's accepted. People, when they think of Blue Bloods, they think of historically really good programs like, you know, UCLA, Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, UNC, maybe even some people throw Indiana into the mix, right? They think of being historically good. But the definition, I just wanted just confirmation, right? I wanted confirmation, but the definition reads current and historically. So it doesn't matter if it's present or the past, right? And I think that's what trip a lot of people up. It's like, well, UConn can't be considered a blue blood because they're not good. Like, they haven't been, you know, they don't have the historical, you know, they don't have the historical relevance of a Kentucky or UCLA or whatever, right? But they are a blue blood. They are, right? And I mean, six national championships in 25 years, if that's not enough, then I don't know what is. I don't know what is. And you got to remember, sometimes UConn, the funny thing is, the reason why it makes this UConn team special is because usually when they won national championships, the following year, they usually kind of like flame out. they usually kind of flame out and they're just not as dominant as they were the previous national championship year. But this particular year, they won a national championship last year. And, you know, they had some NBA guys, they had some dudes leave, whatever. Replenished roster. They come back. They're just as good, if not more. They're just as good, if not better. And they win a national championship back-to-back times. So that's the crazy part. That's usually what happens to UConn. And I think over the past 25 years, they've made the tournament 17 times. And that's a pretty good ratio. 6 out of 17 times in the last 25 years, you won a national championship. That's a pretty good ratio. That's a pretty good ratio in a tournament that is full of parity and upsets and so forth. But truly remarkable. So another thing with the Blue Blood concept, when you mention these programs, like the Blue Blood programs, obviously, UCLA, Kentucky, UNC, Duke, Kansas, there's also usually like a singular iconic coach that's attached to like the legacy of those programs. Or usually there's usually like one or two coaches that's connected. Like when you think of UCLA, you think of John Wooden, right? You think of John Wooden. With UNC, you got Dean Smith, right? The legendary Dean Smith. And then also you sprinkle in some Roy Williams as well, with the great teams that he had in the 2000s and 2010s. With Duke, obviously, Coach K. Kansas, you got Bill Self. So I think that's the misinformed thing with UConn, whereas, you know, UConn, you got obviously Bill Calhoun, but then you got Kevin Ollie and now Dan Hurley. There's several coaches, there's several cooks in the kitchen. There's several cooks in the kitchen when you think of UConn's dominance over the 25 years. There's been several coaches that's connected to that, and usually with the blue bloods, I think that's what throws it off a little bit, where there's usually a coach that's tied and true and connected with the program, right? So like I said, UCLA, when you think of their national championships, it's John Wooden, right? It's John Wooden, what he was able to do with his bigs like Bill Walton and Kareem, or I should say Lou Alcindor, Dean Smith, right? Dean Smith, the plethora of players that just came out of UNC, right? That's the tie-in. That's the tie. Duke has Coach K, right? So there's usually like a singular, iconic, all-time great, legendary coach, or maybe two, right? You know, two that kind of make up the program's dominance. Whereas with UConn, there's been several. But let's move on to the breaking news. Speaking of blue bloods, Coach John Calipari. Coach John Calipari leaves Kentucky, takes a 5-year deal from Arkansas to become Arkansas's new head basketball coach. With Calipari, I mean, let's be honest, John Calipari, he's kind of like the godfather, the pioneer of the one and done concept, right? He quickly once it became a phenomenon, he quickly adapted to it and ushered it in, like pleasantly ushered it in. Now it's been true and it's been proven. It's just really, really hard to win big in March and April with young freshmen. It's really hard. It's really, really hard. And for just my opinion, little old Isaiah's opinion, I always figured it would come to crossing roads where Calipari and his drive and his motive and his interest is we're getting as many guys to the NBA as possible. And I knew Kentucky is like, well, we're the University of Kentucky. And our brand, yes, granted, yes, we have a lot of NBA guys, and we like that for us. But also, we're trying to withhold our brand. Our brand is as big as it gets in college basketball, and we need to win. We need to win like it. Winning is important for them. So I always kind of figured the two would clash, and it would at some point it would come to an impasse. And now you just look at it over the past several years, year in, year out. I mean, not only it's one thing not to win the national championship, right? It's one thing not to win a national championship. It's a whole nother thing not to win a national championship, but then also lose. Or like Kentucky, they're not even making it out of the first weekend of the tournament. They're losing in the first round. They're losing in the round of 32. They're not even making it out of the first weekend of the tournament. So, and I think their last Final Four appearance came in 2014, 2015. That was the year they went, they started the year off 38-0, and they lost, right? They lost to, Wisconsin. Yeah, Wisconsin with Frank Kaminsky. And so like you take that into a part. I mean, he hasn't won a national championship since what, 2010, right? Hasn't won a national championship since 2010. That was with Anthony Davis. 2011, 2012. He hasn't won a national title since 2011, 2012. That was obviously with Anthony Davis. Could you imagine Nick Saban saying, hey, telling Alabama, hey, I know we're trying to win, whatever, but my goal is to have as many NFL guys or as many guys in NFL as possible. I mean, at some point, it would be like, okay, like Bama and Kyler Perry, great recruiter, really good recruiter. In terms of X's and O's and making in-game adjustments, that's just not his strength. That's just not him at all. He's an all-time great recruiter. And truly, his legacy is he is the pioneer and kind of like the godfather of the one-and-done concept. He fully embraced it. I would say fully embraced it to a point where, as I said, Kentucky got tired of it. They got tired of it. I mean, they got tired of it. And year after year, you know, they win their 20 plus games on a yearly basis, but they just Kentucky, man. They have not had the tournament success that the Kentucky fan base is just used to. They just haven't had it. And I think a lot of that a lot of that can be equated to him full on embracing the one and done, right? Kind of that's just what it is. So you know, not surprised that the two went its separate ways, right? Mutually, quote unquote. Not surprised at all. Like, could you imagine, you know, Ryan Day or Kirby Smart or Kalen DeBoer coming out and saying, "Hey, we're trying to get as many NFL guys. We're trying to get as many guys into the NFL as possible. You know, we're not. Who cares if we miss the college football playoff? Who cares if we don't win the Big Ten? People in Columbus are coming for Ryan Day's head because he can't beat a juggernaut in Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. Could you imagine if Ryan Day had the skull to say, yeah, you know, our main focus here at Ohio State is trying to poop out as many NFL guys as possible. People be like, what? The people in Columbus would be like, what? You think they have pitchforks and you think they, you know, they're tearing the town down because Ryan Day can't beat Michigan. Could you imagine if he came out and said that? Imagine that. Imagine after these last 3 years, Ohio State hasn't been able to beat Michigan. And post game, Ryan Day like, yeah, we're going to have such and such. We're going to have this number of guys going into the NFL draft. The people in Columbus wouldn't live through it, right? Could you imagine if that was said by Nick Saban or Kalen DeBoer? You know, I mean, Georgia, they're good, but who cares if we can't beat them? We're trying to poop out. That just doesn't fly. And Kentucky, in terms of college basketball, they're on par, you know, as we talked about it, they're on par with those type of brands in college. They're on par. They're not going for it. And I think at some point change had to come. So I'm not surprised that he took the Arkansas job at all. We see this all the time too, where, you know, both parties, both sides just need a fresh start. And that's what it feels like with John Calipari, with Coach Cal in Kentucky. It just seems like they need a fresh start. The message kind of ran dry, I would say, at Kentucky. You know, preaching the one and done and, you know, trying to develop and poop out as many NBA kids. Cool. But when you can't back that stuff up with some winning, it definitely looks away. And you're just not at any like little program, right? I think you can get away with that at different programs where they're comfortable with winning 20 plus games. Like, but at Kentucky, it's they're like, you're not winning tournament games. You're not having late season success. It's an issue, right? I use some college football references. You know, if Kirby, if Ryan Day, if Steve Sarkisian or Kalen DeBoer, if they just went to their boosters and said, hey, you know, I mean, we're trying our best and we're going to develop as many NFL guys as possible. boosters will look at them and be like, okay, yeah, that's good for them. That's good for you. But why are we not making the college football playoff again? Like, it would be a huge issue. Why are we not winning the Big Ten? Why are we not competing or playing in the SEC championship game? Why? Why, Kirby? It would be a huge issue. It would be a huge issue if all of a sudden Georgia just, you know, didn't make the college football playoff or didn't go as far as they should. They're getting the number one recruiting class and they're just not having late season success. It would be a huge issue. I mean, Ryan, I know, I mean, Ryan Day, if Ryan Day said anything remotely close to that, oh my gosh, they're already on Ryan Day's case because he can't beat Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. So I can only imagine if he said something like that. In terms of who can feel, or who do I think feels the vacancy spot at Kentucky in terms of head coach, I think Billy Donovan would probably be my first option. I mean, proven winner, right? He's proven in the sport. He's won back-to-back national titles at Florida. By the way, Kentucky had a front row seat to that, right? In the conference with Florida for years. Billy Donovan, not only did he build somewhat of a powerhouse at Florida, he built a notable basketball brand at Florida, but he also had a lot of NBA guys come out of Florida at his time, during his time there. So, proven guy, good recruiter, and I think he's a better X's and O's game planning wise. I think he's better than Coach Cal at that aspect. Scott Drew at Baylor, I think he rings a lot of bells. He obviously won a national championship at Baylor. He's been consistent, consistently good at Baylor, right? I think that's another option. And then obviously, I mean, Dan Hurley, he seems like a name that's going to always be at the top of people's, at the top of, like, you know, when it's jobs like Kentucky, they're going to try to go for the best, the cream of the crop. I don't think that's likely. I don't think he even thinks about going to Kentucky, but I think Kentucky gives him a call. But I think Billy Donovan should probably be the top guy or the top candidate to get that job. So let's move on. Let's move on to some college football and I must say, thank you guys for continuing to leave comments and questions. Thank you. I greatly appreciate that because, first, I think it's important for interaction purposes, but also it helps with engagement. And it's a metric that I use in terms for, you know, to track our engagement and so forth. It helps. So thank you. Now, in terms of the comments and questions, over the past couple of days and so forth, and just reading through some of you guys' comments and questions that you guys have left, I get a lot of questions about Notre Dame and how should I feel about Notre Dame coming into 2024? Can Notre Dame win a national championship in this modern college football structure, right? I've been getting a lot of those type of questions and comments being left. So I was like, okay, let me actually craft a whole segment about this. And Notre Dame football, it's a really good program, right? It's a really good program. Do I think it is a top 3-4 program in college football? No. I think there are other programs and schools that have consistently been better, and they may have even beaten Notre Dame in some regular season matchups or in some postseason matchups over the past several years, right? So they're not at the cream of the crop, but Notre Dame, if you're a fan or if you're a part of the Notre Dame fan base, you should feel really good about Notre Dame and their standing and where they stand in terms of the college football world. Are they better than Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama? No, they haven't. They're just not. And they haven't beaten those schools. They haven't beaten those caliber of programs. I will tell you this, though. They are a really, really good program. They are, I would, if we're putting those teams and programs in that top tier, Georgia, you know, Ohio State, Alabama, I'm just naming, you know, if that's the top tier, then Notre Dame is right under that. And if we're just talking about a snapshot over the past 3 to 4 years, Notre Dame is in that next tier below those teams and those programs. Now, I'm going to just point out some metrics. It's not the end all be all, but it's just to help you. It's just to help you gauge. They're ranked ninth in this year's recruiting cycle in 2024, and they're ranked number one in next year's recruiting cycle for 2025 so far. So they're really good. And I know there's some people, not everybody, may not even be the majority, but there are some people during this time right now that believe or have this belief that Notre Dame can't win a national title in college football modern construct and how it is designed right now. A lot of people feel like they can't do it. And I will say this, I'm going to quickly just say, I don't agree with that belief or such notion. I'm not going to say they can't. I will say this, though. It is much harder. It is much harder to win a national championship in 2024 at Notre Dame than it is at a Texas, Georgia, right? Alabama. It is much, much harder. And there's some things that got to go your way. Now, let's start with this. The coaching staff I believe in, and I think it's really, really good. I like Marcus Freeman a lot. I think he is the type of culture guy, and he has the type of culture that I think can bridge the gap between classic Notre Dame football and, you know, the modern college football and how modern college football is looked at right now and how it's just operating. I think he can bridge that gap. Now, like I said, I think there's people that think Notre Dame has a ceiling. It's not the 80s. It's not the 90s no more, right? So I don't completely agree with that. But if there was one team or a couple of examples that I can use to help support my claim that Notre Dame doesn't have a ceiling and they, in fact, indeed can win a national championship. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. I'm not saying it's going to happen in 2025. But if you were asking me, can they? You didn't ask me, will they? You guys are not asking me, will they? But can they win a national championship? I think they can. Now, let me explain. I look at a program like Michigan, who I think a lot of people placed a lot of similar ceiling and projecting, the same projections and the same reasons why people put ceilings or put a ceiling on Notre Dame, they use the same reasons to put a ceiling on Michigan in this same college football era. And Michigan just proved it that this past year that you can a program like Michigan, a program like Notre Dame, that have those high academic standards, you can win a national championship. I think Michigan proved that. So a lot of those same similar reasons, because I think what I'm getting at, there's some similar reasons as to why people thought Michigan can't win the national championship in this college football era. People use those same reasons for Notre Dame not being able to win a national championship in this college football era. So if Michigan can do it, and it granted, like I said, it took a lot. It took years and years for Harbaugh to build upon what he had. Michigan is a really good program in terms of developing. They don't just rely on getting 4- and 5-star guys. No, they craft, they develop, they nurture, they mature, and their players get better as they will. Now, Notre Dame and Michigan, they have the capability to get 4- and 5-star guys, But I don't think, and I'm gonna just put myself out there, I'm gonna put my neck out there. I don't think they can get the 4 and 5 star guys at the same rate like a Texas or Georgia can. I'm just saying, and I think that's fair. I think many people would agree that they cannot get the same amount of 4 and 5 star guys at the same rate that a Texas, a Georgia, an Ohio State can. Maybe even like a team like Oregon. Maybe they can't. But that doesn't mean they can't win a national title. That doesn't mean they can't win a national title. So that's one example. Another example is Clemson. I think a lot of people before Clemson started winning national championships, making college football playoff appearances, going toe to toe with the great Nick Saban and Alabama, before all of that transpired and happened, a lot of people placed similar looking reasons as to why Clemson, they can be a good program. They can be a really, really good program, but they can't be amongst the elite of the elite. And you fast forward 10 years from you fast forward 8-10 years, you look up, Clemson got a couple national titles en route. They didn't beat, they didn't play some thrillers versus Alabama. They didn't slay Dragons in Ohio State. They have been able to compete with the top of the top, the cream of the crop in college football. So those are just two examples where in Michigan and Clemson, for similar reasons, people put ceilings on those programs and said, hey, those programs, they can be really good, but they can't necessarily win national titles in this construct of college football. A lot of people thought that. A lot of people thought that about Clemson. And before they started going toe-to-toe, hitting up, matching up with Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State, before all of that happened, before all of the college football playoff appearances, before all the national championships, a lot of people thought that Clemson didn't have the capacity to do that until they actually did it. And a lot of people thought the same for Michigan. Oh, they can't beat Ohio State. They can't beat Ohio State. There's restrictions. There's boundary. They can't beat. They have a ceiling. They're only a 10-win program. That is the same thing a lot of people are saying about Notre Dame. So I say this to say this. I'm not predicting or projecting that Notre Dame is going to win a national championship this year. Hell, it may not even be next year. It may take 3-4 years, right? But I think it's possible because I have 2 living examples of it where for similar reasons, they were placed at those programs, Michigan and Clemson. They had ceilings on them, and they quickly got dispelled because those programs rose above those ceilings. And it took, with Clemson, with the emergence of Deshaun Watson, then Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence, it was the quarterback play and the defense from Brent Venables and so forth. It was a couple of recruiting classes that went really, really well. With Jim Harbaugh, same thing, got the right quarterback in J.J. McCarthy, been developing and building recruiting class after recruiting class after recruiting class, developed, matured some guys, and wow, you look up, in a 3-year span, Michigan is 40-3. They got 3 straight Big Ten championships. They got 3 straight playoff appearances, and they cap it off with a national title. That's how quick things can happen. Not saying it's going to happen year one. Not saying it's going to happen next year. But that's how things can move. That's how things can evolve. I think Notre Dame has that same kind of potential. They just haven't done it yet. That's all. All right. So I think I'm going to wrap this bad boy up. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I will soon. Probably going into the weekend, I will release another episode for you guys. It'll probably just be me talking about, it'll probably just be me answering some of the following questions that you guys leave, or that you guys have already left and that you guys continue to leave once this episode drops and so forth. NBA playoffs right around the corner. NBA playoffs right around the corner. So, you know, let's buckle up our seatbelts for NBA playoffs as well, you know, but continue to leave comments, continue to leave questions. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Your boy's out. Peace, deuces, gone.